Vegas Weekly Nightlife Podcast. I'm Deanna Rilling, and on the phone I have DJ Shadow. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So, big news. You're actually going to be in Las Vegas at the House of Blues on October 30th. And it's kind of ironic because about a month or so ago, I was like, man, can somebody please bring Shadow to town? And it's like my wishes were answered. So what do you think concert goers will experience from the Live from the Shadow Sphere tour?
Well, first and foremost, since I know this show is going to change quite a bit next year, I wanted to just kind of have a chance for the U.S. to see the show before it does change. I did about 40 dates, mainly in Eastern Europe and far Northern Europe over the summer. And the reason I'm touring right now is that I had been in the studio for about 6 months, and as anybody who's in the studio a lot will tell you, occasionally you just start feeling like you're beating your head against the wall and you feel like you need some fresh air and some new inspiration. And so that's what touring is. And also, I just really wanted to try out the music and have people's reactions to the music inform how I perceive it to some extent on finishing. So, as far as the show goes, we set out back in March when we were conceiving the show, and when I say me, I mean my visual guy Ben Stokes and myself. We were trying to come up with a show that would be completely different from any other DJ show because we knew we were playing a lot of festivals out in Europe. And, we wanted to come up with a show that even if people were in, at this place in Spain or Portugal or Finland or Bulgaria and they didn't even know who I was, they would leave going, well, out of all the shows we saw, that one was pretty cool. That was different. They were trying something different. And the music. Hopefully they feel that way. So the show is, I feel like I'm evading the subject. I just feel like if you've ever gone to a DJ show and felt underwhelmed or felt like you were being, just somebody up on stage pumping a fist at you, or, we try and do the antithesis of that. We try and make it a real experience and a real audiovisual feast. So I think that kind of says it.
Cool. You mentioned trying out some of the new material, and from what I've heard is that you're trying to put together a new artist album for 2011. Is that correct?
Right.
So you're previewing some of that. Do you have an anticipated drop date?
Not yet. I mean, I hate setting dates because then inevitably they come and go, and then
right.
People start thinking there's a problem or something. I mean, I'm hoping early summer of 2011, and that's just based on what I was able to accomplish in the first 6 months of working on it. So I feel like if I give myself another 5 to 6 months, I should be able to have the album that I feel like I need to have.
Of course, a lot of people bring this one up, but for me, Introducing was probably the first electronic album, if you want to call it that, that I had, and I still listen to it regularly. But do you ever revisit it at all, and what do you think when you listen to it almost 15 years later?
I revisit it all the time, mainly, especially periodically when I need to do a tour, because, I'm well aware that when people come to see me live, they're going to expect to hear some of that music, and I respect that, and I try and achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the real trick is just trying to offer something new. Because the album has been out for 14 years now, it becomes difficult to conceive of a new way of reworking the music. But what I did on this tour for the first time is I actually broke out the old multi-tracks, the actual ADAP multi-tracks, and
cool.
Kind of played with those, and that sparked some new ideas. I think, my thoughts on the record is that it was an honest reflection of where I was at the time, mentally and in my life, and that's really what I've always tried to do with every album, from that record to The Private Press, to The Outsider, to the one I'm working on now. They're all different, and I think they have to be different, because, you grow, you learn, you change, And I think, you know, it's the only way that I can make honest music. I kind of don't like when artists that I like don't evolve, because it makes me feel like they're stuck in one gear,
right,
you know, in their life or something. It feels strange to me. So as I get older and as I learn more and am affected by more music, the music will change.
Cool. What do you do with maybe your extensive vinyl collection these days? Do you actually still go digging for physical records? And do you have kind of a approach to searching for samples?
I mean, vinyl's still my preferred format, but it's not something that I kind of wear as a flag. Mm-hmm. So I think it's foolish to ignore and dismiss technology. You have to use it for what it is and factor it in a way it can work for you. But, right before we spoke, I was just queuing up a 45 to check it out and write a little note in pencil about what it is. So
nice.
20 years later, when I open the box, I won't have to sit there and wonder what it is. I already wrote that. wrote it on the sleeve.
Right.
In fact, I wrote, in this example, it says, a novelty rock pop of now. It will be relegated to a box to be rediscovered at some point in the future. But at least if I write what's on the sleeve, or if I write on the sleeve what's on the record, then it's not so much of a mystery whenever it is that I get back to it.
Well, no, one thing I definitely was wondering, a few weeks ago I was at a club here in Vegas with one of your contemporaries. We were observing, we were watching a celebrity DJ who shall also remain nameless on the record. One thing we observed is that despite some of these like really crappy sets, people are enthralled with these celebrity DJs and not necessarily their skills. So what do you kind of think of the current state of DJs and production? And do you think the masses are maybe being spoon-fed some of this music?
I mean, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on contemporary DJ culture, but, you know, I do think that this sort of celebrity DJ stuff is a little bit stomach-turning. And
right.
I actually went to Ibiza for the first time this year.
Cool.
And did kind of an alternative set, certainly for Ibiza.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that what's fascinating about going to that island is it's this one place on the planet where the DJ is king. I mean, you know, you get off the plane, you get on the road, and you immediately start seeing billboards for all these DJs. And it's kind of like, I was full of mixed emotions, kind of like, wow, that's really garish and obnoxious. And on the other hand, it's really kind of exciting that it's a DJ up there and not like, you know, Survivor or Toto or some band playing in Reno or something, you know what I mean? So it on one hand, it was kind of cool, but on the other hand, I was, you know, you have to kind of wonder like, yeah, this is great, but ultimately, what is it that's being, you know, what kind of product is being offered? Is it, you know, like good for your body, or is it junk food?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I always kind of rate entertainment and media. Is it, you know, there's really only two types. There's junk food, and then there's something that actually might inspire you or kind of affect you in your daily life. And you know, I think it's the classic difference between people. You know, you see people every day that you're just like, how can somebody carry themselves that way? I mean, you want to just run in the opposite direction. And I think DJing just reflects that difference in people. I mean, personally, I've always just tried to, you know, provide an alternative. And I think that's what I have to try and continue to do. I mean, that's, you know, it's really not up to me to say, well, this type of music is crappy and this type of music is good just because I say so. It's more just about, I have to be true to myself. And I didn't set out to be famous. I didn't set out to, you know, make $1 million and retire somewhere. I set out to share music that has affected me and helped me in my life and expose it to people. And I do that through, you know, the mixtapes that I make or when I play out, and thus in the music that I sample and in the music that I make. And hopefully, whether it's, you know, a show like the one I'm going to be doing in Vegas or a small Funk 45 set in Tokyo. By the end of the night, people are like, you know, I listened to an hour and a half, 2 hours of good music tonight, and that's the best I can do.
On a different level, I know you're in the DJ Hero game, and the thing I found fascinating is a lot of people still weren't really familiar, even other DJs that I know, they're like, oh, I don't really know this song, and I was kind of shocked, but what do you think about your character in DJ Hero with the glowing eyes, and are you any good at the game?
Well, the glowing eyes thing was my idea because, you know, early on when they would send little test representations of what my character would look like, I've always felt that the eyes are like the window to your soul, and that's why it's so hard to capture eyes synthetically. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when everything starts to look kind of fake.
Right.
And I just liked the way it looked when there were no pupils in the eyes, because it just felt, you know, my reference point to them was like Doctor Strange in the Marvel comics.
Okay.
He had an air of mystery because he had no pupils in his eyes. And there's a lot of characters like that, and I think that's why in comic books, certain heroes, it's sort of like they're ambivalent. Are they heroes? Are they villains? It's not loaded in that way. Yes. Anyway, so that's that. And then as far as the game itself, yeah, I think I'm pretty decent. I don't sort of stay up. I'm not much of a gamer these days because, you know, there's only so many hours in the day.
Right.
And music takes up the majority of it. But, I mean, I was a hardcore gamer growing up, as most kids, you know, my age were.
Mm-hmm.
In arcades and with, you know, the first generation of Ataris and in television and ColecoVision and Sega Genesis and all that stuff.
Right.
But so, you know, that has carried through, and I get the game, and it certainly helps to have been involved in the back end of it. But, you know, I went over to Freestyle, which is the people who actually create the game over in London, and there's people who work for that company that sat down and just, they can obliterate, you know, I mean, they're serious gamers.
Mm-hmm.
And they can, you know, obliterate anything I can do on that game.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks so much for your time, and I'm really looking forward to this show on October 30th at the House of Blues. Anything else that maybe we need to add that people should look out for?
No, I mean, I don't really have anything to promote, but check out my website because
it's cool. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the one-stop information shop because there's so much misinformation even on official, you know, supposedly official places on the web.
Right.
And it's nice to have my own place where it's like, okay, if it's here, it's true, legitimate.
Cool.
And that's how I think people should use it if they choose to do so.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks again, and good luck with everything, and looking forward to the new album next year. So.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Take care. For up-to-date Las Vegas nightlife and dance music scene news, always be sure to check out LasVegasWeekly.com. One, two, three, four, five.